tend to only get people in the room who already think of themselves as advocates. And one of the things with advocacy that we know is that everybody is an advocate and everybody needs to be an advocate. And so, but it's often hard trying to convince people of that. But as you heard from my bio, I am not a public health expert, and I don't pretend to be one. But I work with a lot of groups that are, and with a lot of groups that focus on public health issues, on obesity prevention, on improving the lives and health of communities. And frankly, most organizations, regardless of what their focus is, has a relation to health and to trying to create a healthier community and healthier people. And one of the things that's so important in doing that is the importance of advocacy. And advocacy really is one of these areas that has become so misunderstood and in many cases feared and in some places sort of demonized as something bad. And that we tend to think of advocacy in the most confrontational, advocacy tends to lead people to sort of the focusing on abortion, the death penalty, or affordable health care, or Obamacare, or, you know, issues that seem to be the most polarized. But advocacy comes in all different forms. And as I was just sitting here this morning, flipping through USA Today, amazed to see that, and some of you may be much more familiar with this, that there seem to be many policies or many states have laws all around the country that ban kids from bringing sunscreen or even hats to camp, because hats could be gang symbols and sunscreen are regulated as over-the-counter drugs, and we can't have that. And so there are all these policies and all these states have rules that prevent kids from bringing hats. And so there's this picture in USA Today of this kid who's bright pink after getting, you know, incredibly burned. And so health policy comes up in every, you know, everywhere, in all different forms, and requires people of not just health professionals, not just people who focus on public health day in, day out, but parents, neighbors, camp counselors, lifeguards, people who with common sense, to be able to speak up and speak out about what makes sense for a healthy community. What I'm going to talk about this morning, and as Nicole read my bio, and you're probably like, why the heck is she going to talk to us this morning? The last thing we want to hear about this morning is tax law. But what's really important is, as we talk about advocacy and we think about the different ways to advocate and the different avenues to be able to speak out, it's important to recognize that there are a lot of different types of entities who need to get involved in advocacy. Some of you may be from health departments. Some of you may be from entities that have CPPW or CTG, see I'm getting with the acronyms, of, you know, with funds from CDC or from other government entities that are more limited in how you can use them. Some of you may be with nonprofit organizations that have more power or more flexibility in terms of lobbying. And so it's important for us to think about in terms of advocacy of what can be done. So as I sort of messed up with my slides here, so bear with me as I scroll down. One of the things as we think about advocacy that's so important is to recognize that when we talk about advocacy, and I think this will apply to all of us up here and hopefully all of us in the room, we're talking about advocacy with a really broad brush. Yes, advocacy includes going to Senator Baucus and saying, please support this bill. Yes, it includes filing a lawsuit that goes up to the Supreme Court saying, please uphold this law. But it also includes all of the public education work that you're doing. The health care bill would never have been passed if it weren't for the people all over the country sort of showing demand and saying, we care about this, we need this, doing the research of how many people are not covered, how many families have gone bankrupt trying to pay for medical bills. Doing that kind of public education, doing that kind of informing legislators is so important. And so it's important to recognize that as we think about advocacy, we're really thinking about it in the broad brush of the research that you do, the the talking with people, going to clinic, going to street fairs and talking to people about why wearing sunscreen is good, or, you know, explaining what kind of sunscreen to wear. All of those kinds of things are advocacy, and they're all important. And while, as we think about trying to get policy change, to ultimately get a policy changed, we may need that actual lobbying of going to a legislator and saying, support this, but that by itself isn't enough. Without all of the other work that's done before it, of talking about the issues, doing the research, getting people to buy into this, that last push, that last lobbying push won't make a difference. And so oftentimes, and I know that many organizations and many of you may be limited in your ability to lobby, and you hear over and over again, you can't lobby. You can't use this money for lobbying. Even if that's true, and we'll talk briefly about that, there's still a lot of other ways that you can advocate. And it's important to recognize that no one type of advocacy is more important than the other. We need it all, and it all works together. It's sort of a big puzzle, and every piece is necessary. So again, there are a lot of different forms of policy. It is true, however, that federal funds cannot be used for lobbying. We could spend hours talking about what that means, how lobbying is defined, and it's an area that is under much scrutiny right now, and CDC actually just, I think earlier this week, put out some guidelines that I'm still sort of reading through and trying to digest about how they define this. So yes, if you have, for those of you who are with public agencies who do have federal funds, there are limits on your ability to go to your senators at the state house, at the state level, at the local level, at the federal level, and say, we want you to pass this bill. There are even some limits on being able to work with going to state health departments and saying, we want policy change. But there is a lot that can be done in terms of talking about the needs, talking about the scientific evidence, talking about the issues you're finding in your community. But again, there are a lot of other entities in the communities that can lobby. And lobbying is not a dirty word. It's not a bad thing. It's something that is necessary. And while some entities and while government funds can't be used for lobbying, many of your partners and many of you, frankly, may be able to lobby. Traditional nonprofit organizations, so groups like the American Lung Association or the American Cancer Society, are 501c3 nonprofit organizations. And they, while they may receive some government funds, they also receive funds from individual contributions, from foundations, from fees for service, from a whole lot of other places. And they can spend some of their money on lobbying. While it can't be a substantial part of what they do, the main activity of a 501c3 organization like the American Lung Association cannot be lobbying. They can lobby. And that's really important. 501c3 organizations can lobby. There are some limits, but the limits are actually quite generous. And we have a lot of information on our website that talks about what those limits are and how much can be done. And I'll just say that there are two ways that 501c3 organizations can determine their limits. We recommend that organizations use what's called the 501H expenditure test. And we do have a lot of information on our website, and I brought some propaganda, some advocacy materials that lead you to our website. But organizations that have 501c3 organizations that have non-government funds, if they use what's called this 501H expenditure test, they can spend quite a bit of money on lobbying. And if you look at the chart, it's based on how much money an organization spends. So an organization that spends $500,000 or less, which is the vast majority of nonprofits, particularly at the state and local level, you could actually spend up to 20% of the total amount that you spend per year on lobbying. And I'm not talking about 20% on advocacy as a whole. I'm talking about 20% of that on lobbying. And what's important about that is that lobbying is a very, as I said, a very small subset of your activities. Under the rules for 501c3 organizations, for those entities that can spend money on lobbying is urging legislators to support or oppose legislation, communicating with legislators that express a view about specific legislation. It doesn't mean talking about public health needs in general. It doesn't mean saying we need to close the food deserts in our community. It doesn't mean we need to find ways to improve school lunches. It's lobbying would be, we need a bill that will increase funding for healthier schools, or we need a bill that will require school districts to go to local farmers to get fresh produce. That is what lobbying is. Or it's urging the public to contact legislators about specific legislation. But that leaves a whole lot that under these definitions for 501c3 nonprofits, urging the CDC to change their policies, urging the FDA to change their policies, urging state legislatures to get rid of their silly rules on sunscreen is not considered to be, or urging school boards or camps to change their policies is not considered to be lobbying. So there's a lot of important advocacy work that is not considered to be lobbying. And it's important, and so it's important to understand that there's so much that can be done. And I'm going to stop here with 35 seconds to go. There's a lot more we can talk about, and when we get into the discussion period, we can do that. But it's really important to recognize and to think about advocacy.